We're going to talk about 9/11, but not that 9/11. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Well, we're going to have to put on our amateur historian hat today, I think.
I believe so. Chuck, I found this one. Sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, we dig through and we're looking at articles and we're looking at blogs and we're trying to see what's going on out there. What is the new themes that are being hit, especially during these crazy days of high camp in the political season where we're into a presidential election full bore? And just it's interesting to see because you can always expect certain organs of the media to do certain things. Well, we found one, and I think it's interesting because it does tie in, Chuck, and we will be talking about 9/11, September the 11th, but we're going to be talking about September the 11th, 1857. Yes, that's right, folks. That would be 155 years ago. 155 years ago, you see, there was another 9/11. And yes, it's okay. Yeah, September 11th comes every year. No. What I'm talking about was there was another 9/11 where a group of people were attacked and massacred by a force, and that it rang down through the years and through the annals of history to the point where people in this country, in America, because this happened on American soil, just like that 9/11, are still to this day angry about it. What we're talking about, Charles, is September the 11th, 1857, and the event. And I'll tell you why this is important in our presidential election race here in a moment. But the event is called the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Now, if I remember correctly, Charles, there was even a movie that was done about this a few years back, probably 5 or 6 years ago. I think John Voight was starred in it.
John Voight was in it. I can't remember the name of it. I think it was called
September Dawn.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But it was a telling. It was more of a dramatic historical retelling. And from what I remember of the movie, they should have stuck to the historical facts and not to the romance that they were trying to build in the movie as a means to get people to want to actually go to it. It would have actually played better if they would have stuck to the original story. But September 11th, 1857, the Mountain Meadows Massacre occurred. What that is was a wagon train of settlers who were heading west from Arkansas, and as they were going through Utah, they were set upon in this place called Mountain Meadows by a group of men who were supposedly disguised as Paiute Indians, but who were actually Mormon leaders and who had actually killed all of the men and I think most of the women. A number of the children in the wagon train were killed. Many of the children then were taken and integrated into Mormon families in Utah. But the point is that the reason why we're talking about this today is because, and I found this on the Weekly Standards blog site. This was about 10 days ago, so it's kind of been sitting here cooking for a while as we determined whether or not we were actually going to run with this. But we decided to talk about it today because the Washington Post, one of the more liberal news organs on the East Coast, decided to use the issue of the Mountain Meadow Massacre as a means to go after Republican, well, by this time, a presumptive nominee, Mitt Romney. Because Mitt Romney is Mormon. He's part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. As a matter of fact, he isn't just a member, Charles. If I remember correctly, he has been a state president and maybe even a bishop in the Mormon faith.
Well, I know for sure he's a stake president. Okay. I don't know about being a bishop.
Okay, maybe that was his father, George Romney. I can't remember. I get this too mixed up a little bit. But the point is that so the Washington Post kind of went around in Arkansas to stir up to see if the locals down there were still upset at Mormons for the Mountain Meadows Massacre and whether or not that anger over an event 155 years ago, Charles, would actually cause them to want to vote against Mitt Romney. I think this is interesting, and I use the term interesting to mean bold-faced attack using the independence of the Washington Post newspaper as a means of using them basically as a 527, an attack ad against Mitt Romney.
Oh, sure.
And it's an attack ad against Mitt Romney. Now, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you've heard us before, you know that neither Charles or I or either one are big fans of Mr. Romney and his presidential bid. And I'm really struggling now to figure out how I'm going to cast a vote come November, if we get to that point and he is still the nominee. But the point is, Charles, I think this is odious from the Washington Post to, you know, if you're going to look at the history, okay, let's look at the history. This is the same idea of, and I'm just going to say, this is the same idea of having African Americans now screaming for reparations over what happened to their ancestors in the 1700s.
Well, one wonders if the Washington Post is going to be interested in, for instance, coining a phrase, perhaps mountain meadowers to go along with birthers on the other side.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Yeah, think about it. This is the digging up of something that we know to be a fact, the Mountain Meadows Massacre, and it was 155 years ago, and as it points out in this article in the Weekly Standard, Mitt Romney, 65 years old, he was nowhere near Mountain Meadows in Utah in 1857. He was not even thought about yet. His grandfather was probably not born yet. His great-grandfather. Yeah.
Grandfather was probably a child during that time, if that. But yeah. The Washington Post goes on with this and basically says that, well, because his co-religionists and ancestors were responsible for the first 9/11. And that, I think, Charles, that really is digging a little, going a little low. But basically, likely he's not denying his belief system, but he's not actually running on it either, if I remember correctly. And I'm not trying to be a Mitt Romney apologist here. I would just like to see some of these newspapers have a little bit more balance.
Well, you're not going to see that. You know that, Barry. The newspapers, for the most part, not all of them, but for the most part, are in the tank for Obama. Let's face it. Most of the news media is in the tank for Obama. It's always been this way. The only time it hasn't been has been when it has been so blatantly awful a presidency. For instance, Jimmy Carter. Even though they came out for him, it was very half-hearted because everybody knew the guy was a bungler and was in way over his head. He couldn't handle the job, and they couldn't in good conscience come out and say he'd done a good job. There was nothing good to point to during Carter's administration.
Except we learned what the term malaise actually meant.
Well, look, we've got a problem here in that we're 3.5 years into this presidency, and the guy's still blaming Bush for the economic downturn. Did it turn down under Bush? Yes. What did Barack Obama do to turn it back around? He quadrupled spending. That doesn't work. It doesn't work in a recession. Now we're talking about, we even have Republicans stepping in to say, we're not going to come out with a tax pledge that we're not going to raise taxes. You're going to raise taxes during a recession. Great job. I keep hearing that for instance, the recovery is hurt because the number of houses being sold is going down. Well, doesn't that indicate a negative recovery, which isn't a recovery at all?
It would.
So this is the kind of propaganda nonsense you're seeing from the newspapers. And while they would disparage anyone who would bring up the idea of the birth, the fact that Barack Obama himself claimed in some of his literature to sell his book that he was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia. And yet now anybody who basically points to that and says, see, look, is a birther. Well, like I say, are we now going to point to people who come up with this kind of nonsense and call them a mountain meadower?
Well, possibly so. Now, Chuck, you know, if anybody really is interested in reading a little bit about this history of what the Washington Post is calling the first 9/11, you and I have both read this book, and I think we could both suggest it wholeheartedly. As a matter of fact, they probably can come to our website at principalpolicy.com and look on our Amazon page and order it if they'd like. You and I have both done a little bit of study on this, and if people, I think, want to learn more about The Doors, it's a fairly accurate investigative book on the history of this incident called American Massacre, The Tragedy at Mountain Meadows, September 1857, by an author by the name of Sally Denton. Now, Miss Denton, I believe it was either her mother was a Mormon or she left the Mormon church herself, and she had actually done the research, because for decades and decades, the Mormon church had tried to bury the idea that it was actually Mormons, members of their own sect, who actually committed the massacre, and tried to blame it off on the Paiute Indians. But by digging through the history records and looking at it from an investigative standpoint, the actual truth of it was revealed.
Well, one of the major cover-ups was the idea that they were trying to protect Brigham Young from any connection with this thing. They tried to pin it all on a guy by the name of Stephen D. Lee, I think
yes,
his name
was. Yes, that's
right. And who was a right-hand man to Brigham Young. And they basically ended up eventually executing Stephen D. Lee for the Mountain Meadows Massacre years and years and years later, like 15 years later or something, he was finally tried. And Brigham Young basically distanced himself, although some documentation has now popped up that shows that Brigham Young ended up with the vast majority of the wealth that was looted from these people who were simply passing through Utah on their way to California.
Well, part of the situation was that the wagon train was filled with gold.
Yes.
They had gold bars, and 140 people were slaughtered in this massacre. And again, it was done in the sense that, well, first of all, we have to remember that the Mormons were run out of a number of places, including Arkansas and some other places that they settled in. They were pushed out. And so part of this looked like it was a little bit of revenge on the way they had been treated. But like I was saying earlier, Chuck, if somebody wants to actually get a copy of American Massacre, they can probably go to our website at principledpolicy.com. And look at our Amazon store, where you can get that, and we can get some credit for you buying it. And I just looked it up on Amazon, and it's about $13 to get a copy of this book. But
it's actually a great book.
It's an incredibly
good
read.
Yes, it's a very good, if you like any kind of history at all, and it's very well-written history. You know, some history is just boring as anything. This is very well-written. And it's very heavily documented.
Yes,
so it's a very good book.
So if anybody's looking for a little bit of for a book for the summertime to help expand their horizons and actually get them more knowledge out there during this election season and understanding where the truth actually lies, we'd suggest coming over to principledpolicy.com and ordering a copy of American Massacre from our Amazon store.
Well, that's right. Now, that being said, Mitt Romney had nothing to do with the Mountain Meadows Massacre, and why anyone would be mad at Mitt Romney for the Mountain Meadows Massacre is really a stretch, Barry. I mean, this is a stretch. It's journalistic license carried to its logical absurdity.
But it is the Washington Post we're talking about.
Well, yeah. And yesterday and the day before, of course, we talked about articles from the New York Times, and it's this, I think, the same company. Isn't the Post and the Times owned by the same company?
I'm not sure of that.
Doesn't matter. They have a very similar editorial policy, which is, shall we say, liberal, despite the fact that people want to sit around and talk about how there is no such thing as liberal bias in the media. All you have to do is read articles like this and then read that editorial that we critiqued over the last 2 days. And guess what? There you are.
Exactly. So
this is the kind of thing that gets serious attention in the New York Times and in the Washington Post.
So in other words, our underlying theme for the entire week has been be careful what you read and parse it carefully.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with reading anything, but you need to read critically. If you sit there and read kind of like a sponge and absorb everything and assume it's all true, you're in trouble. I don't even assume stuff is all true from authors that I like and follow and always believe. I've always been one who actually went to the footnotes and read the stuff for myself, and I don't necessarily always trust that.
No, don't blame you because you have to be careful because, you know, you can see, especially if you have an author over time, sometimes their viewpoints, their worldview changes.
Oh, absolutely. Mine certainly has. Mine certainly has. So that happens. Well, Barry, guess what? We're out of time.
I figured we were. So keep sharpening your worldviews, ladies and gentlemen, and join us for our Saturday edition tomorrow at noon.
Join us again for another Principles and Policies.